and welcome to Rewatchable number 246. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 7 episode 13, The Killer in Me, and Angel season 4 episode 11, Soulless. As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find this post on hypeable.com or visit us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen. I am a super fan and one of your hosts today. I'm joined by fellow super fan Natalie and our two newbies, Mitch and Kristen. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
All right. So Mitch teased us a little bit about his fun fact before we started recording. So I want to know what it is.
All right. I know sometimes that like Mai like plays like hockey in the background and Brittany plays like Harry Potter Weekend in the background. This time I am playing for the first time during a podcast. The first time it was at 305 of Glee because apparently I hate myself.
Why? Mitch, why? 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 Why of all episodes? Why that?
It's just, I really like West Side Story being covered specifically. So
oh my
there's
God.
Sound on, so I like, they're singing Uptown Girl, and I'm going along with it in my head.
Aww.
And I can see.
Uptown Girl was really good.
Well, I can hear, really it's good. Weird. Like, even though I'm just watching it, I can hear the differences of the studio version versus, like, the things they did during the show recording version of it.
Oh,
it's strange. I think I've seen this episode a lot.
Guys, this is when I still watched Glee and still had hope. So naive.
Okay. I've been thinking a lot about Glee in the last few days and weeks, actually.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it really, yeah, really, really quite a lot. I might rewatch it this year, but I don't think there's any streaming service that it airs on. I don't know, but in the US, is it available on any streaming service in the US?
Watching it, yeah.
Oh, it's on Netflix in the US. It's not on any streaming in Australia, and I actually don't have the DVD set. So I have a few random seasons, but I'm not all at, like, the box set once finished. So I've been thinking about rewatching it. I don't know.
You can VPN, like, change your...
No, like, Netflix VPN. You have to have like most VPN switches still don't work for Netflix.
Really?
Yep. Netflix still knows. It says, you appear to be using a VPN. Please stop. Like, yeah. And it doesn't.
Wow.
BBC, you can switch it for BBC iPlayer. I switch it for like CW and like all sorts. But Netflix, they have clearly have sunk a lot into being able to identify most VPNs.
I was going to say get a nice paid one, but still. Oh, God. Netflix, what are you doing tonight?
It's the universe telling you don't rewatch Glee.
Don't rewatch Glee.
So mean. Okay.
It's not all
Oh,
bad,
no, no.
Peter.
I don't care if I'm outnumbered here. You would never convince me to watch that show again.
I just rewatched it not too long ago while I was at work. Like, it's the best show to just listen to when you have other things to do. Because you just kind of tune in for the songs you like, and you just keep working when shoes wrapping and
hey, I'll
things.
Just listen to the CDs. I'm fine. I'm set.
I think it would be different if Corey hadn't died. I think for me, a big part of it is like watching it be such like a stupid, like ridiculous show and very fun, and then knowing what happened is really hard. But I did, like, I'm going through all my CDs at the moment, like, literally listening to like every CD that I pick up off the shelf in order to be like, do I actually need to own this in a physical form? And one of the first on the first shelf was the Warblers full album, and I saw it for the last few years. Aww. And because of that and American Crime Story sort of having Darren Criss doing a lot of press, I'm just like, God, remember like that weird 8 months when like the entire world got like super caught up in this like Warbler, like how, like, what a weird phenomenon to like, oh, it plays, like, you know, and they're on Ellen and like.
Okay. What Fisher have I opened, Karen?
I don't know, but I'm trying to close it. Natalie Fisher? Okay. Anyway, did nobody catch that?
I got it. I was
okay,
there.
Good. My name. All right, that's great. Yeah,
yes. Okay.
Yes. If you guys want to relive Glee, which I don't recommend, we do have a podcast for that. Go listen to Glee Chat. Lots of fun.
You mean you don't want to do Glee Rewatchable?
I would never. I would.
Come on,
Christian. I heard that. No, the answer is no.
Like, all right. We'd all be set odds. It'd be horrible.
No. Natalie, what's your fun fact?
Well, that, I think I can be in on Mitch's in that I, you know, like I was, I've also been thinking about Glee. I've been listening to as I said, all my CDs over the last, I've only got through about 12 out of like 200 or more so far, but like I barely listened to any music last year in 2017. I've been listening to CDs and I'm very bad at like going on Spotify and being like, what do I want to listen to? Like freedom of choice is like a terrible thing for me. Like I never get anything done. So I've just been, you know, in the process of literally doing everything in my house, like packing up everything or going through everything, you know, setting up a way to listen to physical CDs, which is on my DVD player because I no longer have something with a CD drive on it. Just listening to the CDs as they are stacked on the shelf to be like, what is this? Do I like this? Do I even want this? And, yeah, it's been wild. And I've been posting posting on an Instagram as I go, if you're interested in my musical journey. But, yeah, the Warblers is, like, the latest one I listened to, and that was weird experience.
I have been seeing some of your Instagram posts, and I find them very fascinating, actually, so I've been reading through them.
Well,
I don't think my cat stuff. Instagram follows you on there yet, Natalie. I need to get on.
Oh, well, you can follow. Your cat can follow me on Instagram.
Yes.
Okay. Is your cat not following me on Instagram? Because
I follow all of you. My cat will have plenty of fun.
Because I'll follow back.
Little paws.
Oh. Kristen, what's your fun fact this week?
Well, Karen has returned to my life.
Uh-huh.
So, but while you were gone, I mainlined The Crown on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I'm freaking, like, that show is so fantastic. And, like, I didn't really know much about Claire Foy before, but now I'm, like, obsessed. And I want to, like, see everything she's in, and I'm obsessed. She just showed up on the red carpet for the Golden Globes tonight, and she looks fantastic. She's in, like, a pantsuit, and she looks, like, just amazing. But, yeah, I'm currently obsessed with The Crown, and then I found out that they're now, like, gonna jump ahead to, like, 10 years, and so they're recasting everyone, and I'm like, no! Like, I just made it through the second season and was so excited to be caught up, and, yeah, so now I have to... You know, now I'll step in where everybody else is going to join, you know, when it comes back. And it's so good. It's so good.
I read an article about that the other day that, I mean, I already kind of wanted to watch it, but it just sounds so good. So I think I'm going to watch it. That's a good segue into my fun fact, which is that I started watching Black Mirror season 4 today. And it starts off with an episode called USS Callister. No spoilers. I know people are really big on spoilers for Black Mirror. But I had this, like, huge nerd moment because it's supposed to be reflective of Star Trek. And it opens on, like, a regular mission. And it feels like old school Star Trek. It's made with, like, a camera that makes it feel like it was made in the 60s. Everybody's hair looks like it's from the 60s. The villain is over the top and just, it's very Star Trek. They even shrunk the dimensions down to, like, season one Buffy. So it was, like, the square version versus, like, widescreen. Oh. And I just, like, flipped out because I was like, oh my God, they just thought of every detail and they made it feel like it was so old. I loved it. It was really cool. Only watched.
Is this a Seth MacFarlane thing that I've seen?
No, that's Orville. That's Orville. Black Mirror. This is Black Mirror.
Right. I was like, he seemed like he wouldn't do Black Mirror, but you never know.
I've never seen a single episode. It really sounds like something that would fuck with my head.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. I've only watched two or three episodes from this season so far. and they've been pretty good. I haven't watched all of the previous ones. You can really skip around because it's
Hayley Atwell's in one. Like, that was kind of where I first heard of it. It's on her filmography. Hayley Atwell did an episode of Black Mirror before she was sort of super famous because it's jumped around a bit. But yeah, I feel like in the last year or so, there's been a lot of hype about Black Mirror and it confuses and scares me.
Yeah, it's basically about how dangerous technology can be. And they're basically like short stories. One episode is one story and the next episode is a completely different story. And it's there to literally mess with your mind. So if you like psychological stuff, definitely check it out. But yeah. The first episode of season 4 was very good. But let's talk about Buffy and Angel, because believe it or not, that's why we're here. And we're going to kick off with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 713, The Killer and Me. Now, this is a story all about how our Will's life got flipped upside down. And I'd like to take a minute to just sit right there. I'll tell you about how evil Rat Amy is the best series-long villain of both shows. Thank you, Mitch, for that. In this episode,
you did a great job.
In this episode, Willow turns into Warren after kissing Kennedy. The two go to Rat Amy because duh, and it's revealed that her old witch friend hexed Willow because she deserved it. Meanwhile, Giles is surprisingly not the first, and why hasn't anyone asked him how he survived the axe to the head yet? Also, Spike's chip going haywire, leaving Buffy with the choice to have it either fixed or taken out. So obviously, first question right off the top, Mitch, how are you feeling?
Whoa. Okay. I really thought, like I say right here, I thought that they forgot about Rat Amy. Because I always think they forget about Rat Amy.
Little face.
Seriously.
And it's just so, it never stops being weird, honestly, because it's always been a joke and never really a real thing, but it is. And now it's like stupid how much they bring her into the show again.
She has like it works, right? Here.
Yeah, no, it's like if I had to write in Rat Amy in a way, I would have done. I was talking about this. I was like, I want her to be like either she's in disguise was what my thing was, and I think this way it works too, that she's making someone else change their appearance for some reason. I think maybe because she was a rat at one point, she likes to transform and do all that kind of stuff. So it was just, it was great. It was kind of just. It's better than like any fan fiction I could have written too. So that's also great. So I'm overall like 10 out of 10, really happy. I hope, honestly though, like it's one of those things that's like, okay, this is the final touch. You can't come back to this. You need to let Rat Amy rest in her extreme anger because she's not angry, but she is. And I'm fine with that. Like I want her to just sit there and stew for the next eternity. I don't need to see any more. Maybe in the comics.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're here for this episode because I know how much Rat Amy means to you, and it's just great to experience that with you. So I'm excited. So yeah, let's kick this off with Willow's plotline in this episode, because Giles and all the girls go off on their little vision quest, and Kennedy stays back because she says she's sick, except she's not really sick. And she tricks Willow into going on a date with her at the Bronze. Nat, I want to ask you, how do you feel about Kennedy?
I would like her to die slow and painful.
Oh. Oh, no. What did she do to you?
She's offensively pushy. It's her behavior is inappropriate. Her behavior actually makes me feel very, very uncomfortable. And within this episode, it would be you kind of learn that she knows, like she knows what Willow did. She knows that Tara died. She knows that Willow's killed someone. Like that's spoken about. It wasn't like big shock. I can't, you know, date anyone because I had this girlfriend that died. Like that's all spoken about in this episode. Like it's an established fact, you know, like, you know, Kennedy mentions Tara, you know, Willow's like, he's the guy I killed. Like, it's like the backstory is known, which makes her pushiness about like going after Willow like even more unpleasant to me. So it's not that I'm like, oh, Willow had a girlfriend who died and no, she can never love again. It's like from the second Kennedy walks in the house, she's like got her sights on Willow and is really wanting to go for her and is literally trying to manipulate her uncomfortably into sleeping with her and like literally like sleeping in the bed with her when she knows that she has a sexual interest in her. And like, I, you know, don't like to play this card, but like, imagine if this was a dude doing this to a girl. And it is so horrible to watch. And you definitely don't get enough from Willow, or maybe I just don't interpret the performance of Alison Hannigan in the way where you're like, oh yeah, Willow wants it, but like doesn't know how to deal with it. Obviously that was sort of the point of her turning into Warren, was this, she did get caught up in this moment. But right from the second they meet, it's like, I don't know, I've just been hating it so much. And I just think that this is a disgusting way to behave. So, yes.
Now, Mitch, as our resident shipper, how do you feel about them?
Natalie has a tendency to open up my eyes to the horribleness of the world in a great way. So, yeah, you're right. You're right. I thought at first it was like, this is fun. Like, I like lesbians on shows being represented. That's cool, especially that it's not like as confusing as it was for me with the Tara thing, because she was just like gay now. I don't know. It seems kind of like a clean slate. Well, I do love the Tara ship. I do. It's Willow's character that I didn't like during that. Now I feel like Willow actually could be ready to move on and to have a healthy relationship too in another great way. But regardless, I know, Natalie, you're right. she's not good.
I did not know that Mitch felt this way. I'm sorry. But yeah, it was not, it's not so much that Willow is allowed to move on at her own pace. Like, it's not like she has to be some like grieving widow forever. That's not the issue at all for me. The issue is entirely in Kennedy's behavior, which could be seen as slightly more forgivable. Like, if she was just like, oh, I vibe that this girl is gay, I'm going to try and hit on her. But the fact that she knows the backstory and has still been doing this is like, disturbing to me.
Kristen, I know you're obviously a big fan of Willow. What do you think about her potentially moving on from Tara? What do you think about Kennedy in general?
Okay, first impressions of Kennedy were that, yeah, she's really pushy and I'm not a huge fan. But I will say that I think maybe Willow needs someone to kind of be a little bit pushy. I don't like how far Kennedy takes it, but like, I think maybe Willow needs to kind of be pushed out of her comfort zone to get back out there if she's going to. Like, she a lot of things have happened. She's been through a lot, and I don't think she's going to just jump back into it. So I wasn't completely against, like, the, you know, kind of maybe tricking her into going on a date, like just talking at the table, like that sort of stuff's fine. It's the, you know, sleeping in the same bed thing that can gets a little on the weird side for me. But like, I don't hate that she's kind of making Willow see herself, you know, as a whole person again. Like, she's not just part of Tara and Willow, and Tara is now gone. She is Willow, and she can move on, and that is what Tara would want for her. And so I don't hate everything about it, but Kennedy's kind of weird.
Yeah, I fall kind of in the middle, to be honest, because Kennedy's behavior, especially in the beginning, does make me feel very uncomfortable. I really hate the idea that she is tricking her into all of these things. Now, obviously, I think Willow is being a little naive too, but Willow's also focusing on the bigger problem at hand. And she does get upset with Kennedy for saying that, like, she's got something else to do and she's shirking her duties as a potential in order to go on this date with Willow. All of that is kind of crappy. However, I think particularly near the end, when Kennedy kind of sees the repercussions of magic and how magic operates and really witnesses firsthand what is going on inside Willow's head when it comes to the idea that she could potentially be forgetting about Tara, I think Kennedy kind of realizes the truth and the weight and the reality of it a little bit more than she did in the beginning. So I don't want to forgive her behavior because I still don't like it, but I'm hoping seeing that will kind of make her come around a little bit more and be a little more gentle when it comes to Willow.
I also think it's sort of interesting that they've decided that, you know, Willow needs to, you know, move on and find another healthy relationship. Whereas, and even though she has sort of more right than anyone right now to be sort of alone and grieving, like Xander and Buffy are both single and both had, you know, sort of shitty ending relationships. I suppose the Buffy and Spike situation is not really over. It's not like she's looking for a a replacement for that right now. But like Xander and Anya kind of breaking up and becoming to a healthy place. Willow literally, you know, through no fault of her own, you know, her partner died. And so she, more than anyone, surely should be like allowed to have time alone rather than like you need to get back out there, whereas the show is kind of pushing that she needs to get back on the horse. Whereas, like, why isn't Xander getting back on the horse, like, helpfully dating around or whatever when he, you know, like, just, like, quote-unquote, just broke up with someone? Like, why does the death – it's not like a puppy. It's not like you replace, you know, like, oh, here, get a new dog to forget about your dead dog, you know? Like, I mean, even that, I think, is not really the right way to live, even with a dog. But they're kind of treating Willow like that with a human partner, and I don't really understand it.
I read something recently. I honestly think it was a BuzzFeed article about the fact that when they brought Kennedy in, it was kind of because they didn't want Willow to fall into this, like, lesbian celibacy thing. Which, on the one hand, I kind of get, because this relationship, her relationship with Tara, was very groundbreaking, and it was something that was important. And the fact that Tara died sucks and feeds into a lot of the tropes that we're also aware of today, you know, killing off your gaze and all of that. But even though I understand that it does feel a little bit like a push to make Willow find somebody new when other straight characters aren't necessarily doing that, kind of like it because it gives the show another chance to have a lesbian relationship at the forefront of the series, and that still at this point in time is very important, so it that doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was coming about too, because I think this I may be the only one that feels this way, I'm not sure. What I was saying by a clean slate is this feels like a healthier start than it did going from Oz to Tara. I don't know. It just, that never sat right with me, the transition, more than the people themselves involved. It was the way that Willow handled it all. Here it feels like Willow is, while still very much grieving, at least more ready within herself in a way. It's like I can see this more than I can see the Tara thing, because when Tara first started, I didn't buy it. I thought she was evil.
We remember, like, Mitch. We remember.
And it took a while, and I really did it up loving her, and I'm still very, very upset about that. So I'm hoping that maybe Kennedy tones it down. Maybe I can learn to love her too, now that I've been taught how to hate her.
You don't have to hate her. That was just my innocent expression of when asked about Kennedy.
You're
very right. She's very pushy, and I think I was kind of like Willow and falling for her, because I was falling into the romance of it in a weird way, because there's a kiss and it's very swelling, mm-hmm. and then of course she turns into Warren, but the way that all happens, it felt like so realistic, like this is my stop, and like all that kind of stuff was just very, like, I don't know, it feels like I've been on a date like that, not the pushy part, but like the end part, and I think I forgot about all the bad because I was thinking about the good.
I want to talk about the kiss a little bit, and obviously the transformation to Warren, because I really liked that they showed the kiss the way that they did, because obviously, like, that was a thing with Tara, and the idea that it is getting the same treatment, and they had like the spin camera going around and everything. I just thought that was a cool moment. And then you see like the gravity of the fact that she's turned into Warren. I mean, can you imagine? This is Willow. This is somebody we've known for years. Like, we have all had our problems with her, which is fine. But like at the end of the day, she's a good person who did a really, really, really bad thing. And the idea that guilt has literally turned her into the person that she killed, I mean, worst nightmare times 10. I can't imagine.
I can't imagine, like, running into someone from, or turning into someone, like, from my high school whose feelings I might have hurt, let alone, like, some person I killed. Like, can you imagine, like, you know, some person in your history who maybe you did something really shitty to, because we're all human and we all are terrible people sometimes. Like, think about, like, turning into them one day, like, how weird that would feel. Like, I can't imagine turning into someone I killed. Like, that just, to look in a mirror and, like, see their face, or have someone scream at you because all of a sudden you're not you. Like, that's terrifying.
And Mitch, I know you really like these body swapping episodes, and and you said you really like the acting here, which I agree with. And I was looking into the production of this episode a little bit, and it was really cool how they did it, because they made sure that they shot the scenes with both actors in the same way. So every scene, they both did it the same way. And one would be watching the other to kind of see how they moved, how they turned their heads. And it had to be very exact, and it took a very long time. And they said in the scenes where, like, Willow is still very much Willow, but in Warren's body, they made Willow go first. They made Allison go first. And then the actor who plays Warren would do it after to make sure he knew how she would act in that scene. And then as Willow progressively turns into Warren, Warren would go first, and then Willow would do the follow-up so that she knew how he would act in that scene. And it was just really interesting, I think, how they did that. And they pulled it off, because you can really, like, when Warren is very much Willow, it's funny because you can really see her in him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it's really cool, because this reminds me of when, Natalie, we were talking on the Faith and Buffy body swap episode.
Oh, yeah.
You and I were very excited about that, because Eliza does a particularly good job of being Sarah in that. And this, I think, this proves to me in a really strange way that the best justice Warren could have had was to be killed, the actor at least, because now he gets to come back and do a lot of fun things.
Right. I kind of feel that way too.
All the time. Sometimes he's kind of just whatever, he's being Willow here, but that's probably more fun for him, the actor, or at least morally, than better than trying to be that creep of a manipulator Warren.
Doesn't his face just like instantly just make you hate him though? Like, I see his face, and even when he was Willow, like, I was like, I hate you with every fiber of my being.
There were some moments when I really did not hate him. There were some moments where I really felt like, oh, this could actually work as like a sympathetic character, not as Warren, as Adam Bush, the actor. Mm-hmm. But you guys, I don't know if this has been mentioned on other episodes, where Adam Bush, this actor who played Warren, at the time that this was shot and at the time of season 6 and then for 5 years following that, is Amber Benson's boyfriend. So him and...
Oh, I remember this, when she died, yes.
So him and Amber were dating at the time of all of this, which makes it, like, triply weird in terms of character depth and kind of, perception of their acting and stuff.
It almost becomes incestuous in a really weird way.
Yeah.
It's odd. Wow. This show has like a lot of those strange meta things. Like every time I'm reminded that Wesley and Willow are dating in real life, I'm just like, oh, what? Because she seems so much younger than him. Not like Cordelia didn't.
There's also another relationship, which not between actors, but between characters, which happens in the comics, which this season, watching those characters interact has been really disturbing.
Yeah, so, it's been hard not to comment on it.
Yeah,
but I can't wait to reveal that one at the end of the series.
Yeah, we're going to have we should do like a this is what happens in the comics for everyone that doesn't want to read it thing.
We could do that, because I have most of them, so yeah.
And I've read none of them, but I know some things right. that I wish I didn't know.
And there's just shades of knowing where they took that story canonically and watching it now. It's just
But let's talk about the most important part of the episode, which is obviously when Rat Amy comes back. And I know Mitch must have been so excited.
Ooh. I think I'm still in shock again.
I really wish I could have been in Mitch's house the first time Red Amy came back. when she first came back, I would have just died to see his
all that payoff. All that payoff. Yeah.
The thing was, I remember guessing it before I knew what was going on, and you were like, how did you know? And I was like, I was just guessing that she comes back in this episode for the other time. And no, this time, I was much more subdued, because I think I'm trying to balance, because it's so exciting, but it's like, wow.
And you make a note in here too, where you say that Amy has every reason to knock Willow down a peg because someone needed to, which I don't know. I know a lot of people think that Willow is very arrogant, and like that's pretty factually true. She has shown how arrogant she is in the past, but like, also, I really want to make sure we're not making Amy like the hero of this story, because what she did was like, oh my god, really twisted.
But I loved it.
I mean, it made for a good episode. This is a good episode. Not one of my favorites. I think it kind of like, this is a breath in the middle of a really good season that they probably had to take, but also I just want to keep going kind of thing. But it was a good episode, and I'm glad that she was sort of at the center. This, but did you think she was good when she initially came back? Were you like, oh my god, she's like, you know,
I wanted to think she was good.
Yeah,
but like my heart was saying, really like, go well. With her, she's beautiful and wonderful and great and not malicious at all. And then I would see her kind of like smile too much, and my head would be like, heart, don't listen to that, she's totally evil, don't fall for this.
What about you, Kristen? Did you fall for it?
I mean, she seemed, I'm a sucker. She seemed kind of like, you know, sincere at first. And so mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And then the episode goes on and I'm like, all right, yeah, this is, yeah. I should have known better. I really should have known better.
I mean, you want to give her the benefit of the doubt, don't you? I mean, she's a cool character that we've been following for quite a long time. She obviously hasn't been in a ton of episodes, but her presence has been felt in a lot of big ways. And you want her to be good, especially because, like, they were kind of friends. And, yeah, she had a bad influence on Willow. But you always hope that people will be better. And the idea that Amy, you know, realized everything she had done was wrong and that she chose to change herself is like, yeah, you know, you want to champion that story. But, no, she's still really bad. So that's kind of cool, too.
Willow really set, I'd say, Amy up for this when she, so I get where Willow was coming from when she was like, if you're really my friend, you'd stay away. But it was just so obvious to me that at that point, if they were ever to bring back Amy, she would have to be evil for the fact that Willow is pushing her out. When at that time, that is, Willow and Amy were just like the confidants for each other. They got each other. They were the only witches in town, really, like doing what they were doing. And sure, they were bad and being very evil and making Twinks dance naked in cages, but still, like, they had each other. So this is where I feel this is Amy's revenge, and that she was a bit justified in her twisted mind.
No, listen.
In a twisted mind, not in a good way, not in a healthy way, but she's justified in her mind for saying, I came back, you took all that time that you could have Chichoni pooed me back into a person, and you just kept me as a rat eating crackers. So I forgave you for that. But then as we were being evil together, you just ditched me. So now I'm evil on my own. Like, you got what you had coming, Willow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Amy was really inherently evil. I think that her circumstances twisted her in a way that I think she doesn't want to change. You know, she loves power as much as Willow loves power, and Willow's learning to deal with that in a way that Amy isn't. But at the same time, you know, if you're a drug addict, you don't keep your dealer around, because that's a constant reminder of all the terrible things that you've done. So I definitely don't blame Willow for pushing Amy away. And I think if Amy had her head on straight, she would understand why Willow had to do that. But, you know, people are petty, and Amy has always been, you know, a pretty petty person. So the idea that she did this is really not too surprising. But it leads to a really emotional scene for Willow, and it leads to a lot of grief coming out and hopefully a mending of Willow's heart over the whole Tara situation. And Kristen and I talk a lot about, you know, when Willow cries, I cry. I know that not everybody feels that way, but Kristen and I are on the same page here. So Kristen, when she was really breaking down and everything, did that affect you as much as it affected me?
I mean, it's just, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Because she's been through so much, and it just, you know, seeing Willow grow now, in the wake of all of that, like, she's, you know, she's learned a lot, and it's, it did kind of break me a little bit. It just, I'm affected when Willow cries.
What about you, Natalie? I know you're not Willow's biggest fan, but what did you think about this scene?
Oh, I don't know. It was, I don't think that Rad Amy was like, I do not think Rad Amy is the hero of the piece, you know.
Yeah.
I do not feel, you know, like that, you know, I hate Willow enough to be like, yeah, anything wrong done to her is awesome on principle. But I don't know, I think that it was a fair, you know, a fair amount of trauma to have gone through. And it furthers my opinion that Kennedy pushing her was quite wrong, mm-hmm. even though that ended up being the solution to the curse or whatever, the, you know, fairy tale kiss or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the breakdown about, you know, what she actually did and where she was at in life, yeah, I mean, it didn't upset me. I didn't cry or whatever. But I think it was fair, and I think it was even more of a signature that it really, she, that, you know, going at it with Kennedy is not actually a good idea. But yeah, I don't know.
And I think Mitch makes a good note in the doc here when he says that Amy had malicious intent, but it kind of ended up bettering Willow's character and making her feel better about the entire situation, which will allow her to move on and will allow this kind of subplot, sub-romance thing with Kennedy to, you know, see where it goes, to open up that path a little bit more, which is going to be interesting for the show. But this is not the only thing that happened in this episode, believe it or not. We have a couple other B plots that are kind of important. First of all, in case anybody was worried, Giles is not the first, which is great.
Yeah.
I read also that for several episodes, he was not allowed to touch anything. So if you go back and rewatch,
okay. Like, and the fact they don't hug him when he arrives and stuff, he was definitely set up as a suspicion. It was not meant to come out of nowhere
Okay, I have a quick question. We know now that he's not the first, at the beginning of this episode, he sits on the coffee table.
Yes.
Like, is that not included? Like, it doesn't have to be that he touches it with his hands? Because when he sat on the table, I was like, wait, does that mean he's really Giles? And so then, from that moment on, the whole episode, I was like, he's not touching anything else. So does it not count if he's sitting? Can the first, like, does the first have, like, super quads and can, like, squat and pretend to sit on the table?
Super quads?
I was trying to put it all together.
Most non-corporeal ghosts and stuff like that, they can walk. Like, so they can touch the ground, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sitting counts as the same as walking, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I mean, if he picked up a piece of paper, I would have been like, okay, he's not the first. But I was on the edge of you, Kristen, because I was like, walking. Super quads.
Yeah. Like, it's all moot now, but I just, you know, at the time, I was like, does this count? And then he takes his glasses off, and I'm like, but those are his glasses, and it's a part of him, so, like, that doesn't count either.
Oh.
Like, I was watching every move Giles made in those first scenes. Like, if he touched anything, I was paying attention. So it was just, I had to ask, because I wasn't entirely sure, but now that we know it, that kind of doesn't matter anyway.
See, I was still in, like, the Walking Dead dumpster fire thing with Glenn with this, because I was like, just tell us. I can't handle this. You basically kill a character on screen, and then you just don't tell us for, like, weeks. And they still really haven't told us. He could still be dead, because they haven't explained it. I mean, I don't know. I just do not know.
I mean, they tackled him.
I'm getting more and more frustrated.
They tackled him.
So he's
That's
there.
Fine, but that doesn't mean that you can't tackle, like, any kind of demon. I don't know, vampire, whatever. He got hit in the head with an axe. Like, we all agreed that there's no way that could have been stopped. So, like, what's going on?
You didn't see him get hit. You did not see contact getting made.
Maybe someone else walked into the room and hit the Bringer, or whatever his name is, on the back of the head, and he falls dead the second the axe would have hit him. So maybe something like that.
Maybe he rolls out of the way.
Like, yeah.
If this was the episode they should have told us that in. They shouldn't have made us wait any longer than this.
Well, I can...
Because if there's so much going on, I mean, like, Rat Amy is in this episode, so I'll give him a one last pass. That's it.
I mean, Giles wasn't the focus of this episode. This was our chance to find out whether or not he was. Now that we know he's not the first... I have a feeling we'll get a very quick, like, either glance back at it in the next episode, or like a flashback, or we'll get an explanation from him. Like, well, I saw the reflection of the guy and I ducked out of the way at the last possible second, and then I kicked his ass, like something like that. Like, I have a feeling that will be a part of the next episode. It's just he wasn't really the focus here, so they didn't want to like. Try and fit that in here too. There was a lot going on, so
yeah, there was a lot going on. And the other important thing in this episode is obviously Spike's chip is kind of going haywire, giving him a lot of pain, as if he's hurt somebody, and it kind of comes and go, and it's breaking blood vessels, and he's bleeding, and it's reaching the end of its life is basically what's going on. It was never meant to be inside his head for that long. And I just want to point out that Mitch wrote in here, suppose they couldn't get Marcus to come back for Riley, but it seems as though his underground flower shop business is booming. And I just want to say that I'm really disappointed you didn't say that it was blooming. That was a missed opportunity.
I saw you added the little L.
I did. It was a missed opportunity. But yeah, that's it was pretty funny that, you know, it was a government conspiracy after all. And yes, they did say that they filled the entire underground facility with cement, but guess they didn't.
We're just going to retcon that. That's fine. I'm cool with it. Usually I'm not. I'm giving this one a pass too. Once again, because like there was so much good going on in this episode, not just even Rat Amy. That was like the humongous cherry on top, but there's a lot of good character development going on here. And I really like this whole creepy element. Like, I love them going around and seeing that whatever creature like that they're trying to fight, like that was somewhat genuinely creepy. Like, it wasn't as creepy as some other elements of Buffy have been. Like, there've been times where I think Dawn was resurrecting her mom for like the 10th time recently. And there's like blood splattering all around the house. Like, that whole thing was creepy. I thought this one was doing a pretty good job, and I thought it set a pretty good scene.
Yeah. The darkness. And then with just their flashlights and like, you knew something was in there with them. Oh, I hate that.
Well, you know what it is. And Natalie, you're more than welcome to roll your eyes at the Mitchness of this statement. It's the fact that they're still filming this on actual film. So it's the grain in the darkness that doesn't show like the clarity that digital would have in the darkness. And I love it because it feels like you're really into the darkness with them. I hate digital scenes that are meant to be dark because they're so crystal clear still, because they can focus in the dark and it doesn't feel authentic. Feels like it's still like during the daytime. But here in Buffy, I think they often do that.
The shots down in the Initiative is very horror movie-y movie-ish in a way that, like, despite this being like, you know, a paranormal, you know, we kill monsters show, it's not really shot like a horror show. But this series of scenes in the Initiative definitely has that tone to it.
Yeah. So the big question here, which I'd like the Doobies to discuss, is that Buffy gets to decide whether or not to take out the chip or if she's going to have the Initiative fix it. What do you think she's going to choose?
I don't know, man. I was trying to think through this as it was happening, and I was like, I was flip-flopping about 20 different ways because, A, what if he loses his soul? B, I guess it still kind of helps them, because even if you have a soul, that doesn't mean you don't want to hurt humans. There's like serial killers for a reason. So it's probably best to take it out from like an I love you gooey eye Spike Buffy thing. But I think she's going to have to go that way because they can't do what I think makes most sense, which is to keep it in, because then it's going to make Buffy look too heartless. And however will they get together?
Aww.
Okay, so in my brain, I had this really dramatic scene, like, playing out as to how this was going to work. And, like, she was going to tell them to take it out, but we weren't going to know that. Like, we won't have seen her tell them that. And they'll wake Spike up, and she'll, like, ask him, like, do I take it out or do we leave it in? Like, what do you want? And he says, leave it in. And she goes, I already had them take it out. And it was like, in my head, there's this whole scene playing out where she trusts him and, you know, he doesn't necessarily trust himself, but she trusts him. And I don't know why, but that is ideally like what I wish could happen. Ultimately, I think... Right, and then they make out.
And once more with feeling like seeing
close again. You guys are very convinced that they are getting back together.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point, isn't it? Like, if Angel's not there, she's going to get together with Spike. She will find a vampire man to love. That's kind of like, that's like the reason it's called Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so she can, like, slay them and love them.
I'm going to say, like, slay them in bed.
Oh, I wasn't going to go there, wow. Carol, but...
I went there for you.
So, yeah, nice. I'm so confused because his chip didn't matter when he was just eating all those humans. Was that because it was like not his intent to do it? He was being manipulated by the first.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was not his control.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was malfunctioning like this. Like it only works when it's not supposed to now kind of thing. But
very interesting that both you newbies think that she's going to have it taken out. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But let's jump into our favorite scenes now, because there are a lot of really good moments in this episode, actually. My favorite, though, is definitely when the Scoobies tackle Giles, and Giles kind of likes it. Like, other than Andrew, he's like, excuse me, don't touch me there. But for the rest of them, he's like, oh, you guys love me. It's really cute. What about you, Kristen?
Yeah, my favorite scene is when Willow comes downstairs and everyone's kind of freaking out because she looks like Warren, and they're like, they finally figure out that it's her, and they're all like poking her. And meanwhile, in the background, Spike is spasming in pain and no one's paying attention. And like the camera pans and you see him over there, and then it comes back and like, Dawn is like poking Willow and she's like, stop it. Like it's hilarious because it's so what's been going on with Spike this season. While everyone else is focusing on the problem at hand, he's in pain in the corner. And then once the main focus is either taken care of or it's, you know, okay for the moment, then everybody remembers Spike is around. And it's like, oh yeah, Spike, are you okay? Like, it was just a really random, funny moment. And I actually went into Karen and was like, oh my God, Karen. Like, they just, it was so funny how the camera goes to him and then comes back and they're all just ignoring him. Like, poor Spike. Poor.
And also, didn't you think, Kristen, that definitely confirms that Warren and Andrew had a sexual relationship from the way that Andrew embraces him?
I don't think they did. No? I think Andrew wants it to have been a thing.
Okay.
Like, I feel like Andrew is very much interested in Warren. I don't think Warren was ever interested in Andrew. But like,
he definitely like held it over his head as like a carrot, you know?
Well, I can see it as a different thing. Sorry, Kristen, go ahead.
No. I think you're right. Like, I think Warren probably used it to manipulate Andrew because he's very easily manipulated. And yeah, like, it's clear in these scenes that Andrew definitely is attracted to Warren. Like, he's like massaging his pec. It's so weird.
Well, I think also for me, what it defined is that while you're probably right, yeah, it wasn't that they actually had a sexual interaction. It probably was something like Warren would let him get just that far, like cuddle in bed, because that physical interaction they had there, while it was not really Warren, made me feel like that. Like, it felt like that's the carrot he's dangling. Like, he's not even just telling him about it. He's like literally like cuddling him often to make him feel like, this is what you get if you stay evil with me. And it's so Jesus Voldemort. Christ. It really is. It creeps me out.
I mean, it's definitely a possibility. But Natalie, what's your favorite scene?
So mine was not a particular one, but it was the moments of Adam Boosh's performance when he was really channeling Willow, like when his whole face changed. Mm-hmm. And basically, yeah, that you saw the different character. There are a couple of really, really good moments. Like, a couple played for laugh, but a couple where it was just, like, acting, man. Like, people can act. And, you don't realize, like, how much someone, like, can change, like, a feeling about themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And Mitch, yours is unsurprising.
Yes. I'm giving a quick shout out to Dawn and Anya cuddling underneath the blanket, because that shows that they're over their klepto fights. That's nice. But my main favorite scene is when Rat Amy was casually awaiting the meeting for her dramatic entrance. Like, yes, I'm here to grace you with my presence. You're welcome.
I just kind of accepted it
pretty immediately too. Like, of course I saw the previously on, and I wish that wasn't in there, because I would have been happier, like 100% surprised if I didn't know. Like, oh God, I would have lost my shit again. I really would have.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into favorite lines now. Mine's really stupid, but I loved it anyway. It was when who is it?
Spike to Buffy.
Spike, yeah. Spike says, who are you going to call, right? And then Buffy just goes, God, that phrase is never going to be usable again, is it? And it was just, oh, it was so great. Kristen, what about you?
Mine is this little exchange between the general guy from the, what is it, the resist? I forget.
Initiative.
Initiative, thank you. The general guy from the Initiative and Buffy when they're in, like, the basement thingy. And the general says, Miss Summers, Agent Finn reported that you tried to contact him earlier today. And Buffy says, I knew it! Government conspiracy. The general then says, he indicated you might be needing our assistance. We're to provide you anything you need to help with ass face here. Those were his exact words, ma'am. It was just like, it was so wonderful to get like this little bit of Riley in that moment too. Like, it just, yeah, it was funny. I loved it.
And I just love, too, like, the general guy is so polite, you know, keeps calling her ma'am and is not questioning, like, Riley's orders or anything.
That as well. Like, that he was like, yep, this is what we're doing. Like, yep. And it wasn't like he didn't inject any personal doubt into it. And it was really loved that.
Even shout out to Riley, who was like, nope, this is completely Buffy's decision. It's totally up to her. I really liked that as well. Natalie, you said this was your favorite line, too.
The general being like, those were his exact words. Yeah, that was my favorite, but I can give a backup, which was Andrew basically bugging the guys to take him with him to rescue Giles. And he was like, if you leave me here by myself, I'll do something evil, like burning something or gluing things together. He's such an idiot. It's really funny how they've made the dynamic with him, like, I hesitate to say work because he's very annoying, but like, you know, what it kind of adds, I really like what it does for Anya as well, like, because like, she's not the one being annoying and weird, if you know
But that actor, he's so good at playing that character, and that character is so alive to me that I really love it.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we didn't know his name at all? It was Jonathan and Warren and then that other kid, and we just assumed he would be the first one to die, and here he is, the last one alive, and he's just being random.
Like, you know, honestly, if there weren't comics, I would expect this character to die before the series end, but he sounds like such comic fodder. Like, we're training him to fight the vampires now. Like, because what else do you do with him? Like, killing him wouldn't even serve a purpose anymore.
Yeah, they just stuck with him.
So weird.
All right, Mitch, your favorite monologue, I should say.
This is the SmackDown to end all SmackDowns. After tossing around Kennedy some with her beautiful magic powers and just about to transport her, evil and best Rat Amy says, this is not about hate. It's about power. Willow always had all the power long before she even knew what to do with it. Just came so easy for her. The rest of us, we had to work twice as hard to be half as good. But no one cares about how hard you work. They just care about cute, sweet Willow. They don't know how weak she is. She gave into evil stuff, worse than I can even imagine. She almost destroyed the world, and yet everyone keeps on loving her. So what's wrong with having a little fun, huh? Taking her down a peg or two. She's such a Slytherin. I love her. Oh my God. Like, I hope in the comics too, she has like just some very long arc that's just like this petty thing against someone else, like Buffy taking her spot at the cheerleading squad or something. I don't know. Whatever. Just like something else that she's been like seething in for over like 10 years at that point. And I would love it. That'd make me really happy.
That does not surprise me at all.
It's the long con. I know, Natalie, we tend to like long cons in any form of media, and she's yeah. queen of long con.
And I'm so glad, again, that you were on this episode and that we could talk about Rat Amy with you and everything, because I know how much you love her. I'm a little bummed that Brittany's not on this episode.
I know.
So that we could talk about Angel, episode 411, Soulless, because this is what she wanted. This is just all she wanted. So, unfortunately...
I love you too, Karen.
Unfortunately, Kristen's here. So,
let's just stuck with me
right now.
Yes. Yeah. But it's going to be...
Sorry.
Brittany will weigh in, I'm sure, when she's on next. But in this episode, Angelus messes with the group dynamic and his soul jar is stolen. So it looks like Dark Daddy is here to stay for some time. Ben and Wes get even angrier at each other when Wes kisses Fred. Connor likes Dark Daddy, and Cordy is willing to sacrifice her body and soul for the apocalypse, which, ew, but I get it.
Stop calling him Dark Daddy.
Stop. World is ending and all, but still, ew.
Dark Daddy. Like, what else do I call him? Because Connor, like,
Angelus.
It's almost like there's a call third character Angelus. Here. Like, Connor sees not just Angel or Angelus, but Dark Daddy. Because no one wants Connor as a son, but ain't Connor's like creating his Dark Daddy.
Moving on.
So, fun fact that Kristen found was that Sean Astin, Samwise Gamgee himself, directed this episode.
AKA Bob from Stranger Things, for those yes. that don't know him as Samwise.
Who doesn't know him as Samwise? Oh my God, even I know him as Samwise.
Oh, that's unfair that I just realized that right now. Oh my God, stop.
Well, see?
What?
Okay, that's fair because I also didn't know. He looks a lot older now.
He's older. That's for sure. No, it just I was looking for quotes and at the top of the one link that we have, it said directed by Sean Astin, and I went, wait, Sean Astin? So I went and looked, and it is him, and I was like, this is just kind of weird and random. Like, I know he directs and he's done some of that before, but how random for him to have directed this episode of Angel and for me to just kind of notice it. It was very strange, but I love him, so
yeah,
all for it.
So that's pretty cool. But okay, I want to really get into this because it is cool that Angelus is back and he does play the part very well, as always. Yeah, I kind of, Mitch, your first note in here is that right off the top, can we address the fact that even Angelus can see how messed up and Oedipus it was for Cordy to sleep with Connor, and she's still pretty unapologetic about it. Honestly, I feel like we've talked about this a lot and we all really hate it. So I'm just going to kind of skim by that. But I really like your next comment, which is you say, and another thing, it's starting to feel like the show is degrading Cordy's beautiful and intelligent and powerful character to only being important per who she sleeps with. And they've made a lot of comments about her body and stuff too, which, I mean, Angelus is gross. So I'm not surprised that this sort of thing is coming out. But yeah, I mean, Cordy is so much more than this plot line right now, and I'm sure that it's bugging other people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so, because it really disturbed me. It wasn't just the Angelus effect of it. It was the fact that, the story's written to be centered around her body now, and it's gross.
Mm-hmm.
Connor is just... He's just the worst character of all time. He's just this, his reactions to everything, the way that he's been handling this, the way that he's been reacting to, about her and about Angel and about everything. I understand that he's very underdeveloped because of the way that he was raised and whatever, but oh my God, he just makes everything just 1,000 times worse. It's just so in terms of, what we've got with Cordy and in terms with everything, the way that he keeps making a fuss about her and not having her is just bringing it down even further.
It sucks because it's they gave us everything we wanted in the Indiana Jones Daydream, knowing that we wanted it, but never giving it to us. Because I have a feeling that Connor's going to stay around being horrible for the entirety of the series now, and or comics, and I don't want that.
They gave us everything we wanted and ripped it away.
Yes.
Yeah, he brings everything to a grinding halt. Every time, like, there's a scene or whatever, he pops up and everything just kind of stops. And it bugs me. It really bugs me. Not even just because, like, he exists, which is, problematic. But just every time he walks into a room, they all kind of stop what they're doing and look at what's happening. And I'm like, just knock it off. Ooh. Like, when he was gone for the beginning of this episode, it was like the greatest moment. And then he just kind of appears and I'm like, oh great, here we go. Or was it the last episode? Like when he was gone, like fighting vampires or whatever for a while. And I was like excited.
Every episode, Kristen, every episode.
I was excited. And then he pops back in and I'm like, great.
But you're right, because they are a well-oiled machine. And then he shows up and they all kind of turn and look at him because you never know what he's going to do. He's a teenager full of angst and he's unpredictable and that makes him dangerous. And they kind of have to babysit him still when really, like, he's old enough that he shouldn't have to. And I try to be objective, and a small part of me does have a little sympathy for the fact that he did not grow up the way that other children did. And therefore he's got, these problems and he doesn't always know how to act. And imagine growing up every day being told that this man who's actually your father is literally the worst person on the entire planet, and then having to come to realize that he's not. He's actually a champion and tries to save the world on a regular basis. So, like, part of me does get it, but everything else on top of that, especially how Connor is written and unfortunately how he's portrayed, how the actor portrays him, really doesn't make up for that fact, and it just ends up being like super annoying.
And do you want to know the worst part about Connor coming in? He got immediate top billing in the show, but Lorne, who sits there and is green and is an adult with a career and really has been in this and committed for years, does not have... It really pisses me off. And he's still around. Lorne does a lot, Like, he's listening to Angela's singing. I need to know what he's thinking.
Apparently we don't want to know. Probably pretty bad.
He always says that, and that's like the most tantalizing part about his character. He knows so many secrets. It's like Regina George with her big hair, or whoever from Mean Girls.
They're in his horns.
The secrets are in his horns.
Yes.
Must have been right. One of those broke off when he got his brain drilled out. Didn't he? I'm sure something like that. I don't know.
That's so sad. So we do learn a little bit about the history of Angelus and the Beast, which is that the Beast tried to make a deal with Angelus back in the day. And it was to go kill some priestesses that the Beast could not kill, but Angelus could. And they ended up showing up and banishing the Beast before it happened. But the interesting thing here is also that, like, Angel refused to do this for the Beast.
Or Angelus did.
Yes.
Okay.
Angelus. Confused. Sorry. Angelus refused.
This show Angelus is confusing.
So, yeah, that was kind of interesting. But, I mean, in the end, and you kind of write it in here, Mitch, so then why does the connection between Angelus and the Beast even matter if the deal was only spoken about, wasn't agreed to or acted upon? The priestesses end up dying anyway because they try to find, like, their descendants or whatever it was. And all of this is basically a dead end, which is kind of annoying, but does anyone really care since we got to see Angelus for the whole episode?
No, because it didn't pay off. It wasn't for a purpose. Like, this whole Angelus thing, now that the soul is stolen, he's going to stick around, I assume. It feels like we didn't earn it because there's no reason to have him here. Like, maybe that's the point. Maybe they, like, had to realize how foolish they are, and they had to realize how body-snatched Cordelia is for allowing this. I don't know. Maybe she legitimately is body-snatched. That's the worst part about this Angelus thing coming back, because she has said repeatedly that she would never want to see him again, and all of a sudden she does, when I swear they found other ways to get around this stuff. Like, they have a fortune teller right then and there, and she has, like, god powers. Can't they figure something else out? Like, it just, maybe they need to go get the sword in the dream that Angel had. I don't know. That's where I thought they were going with this, but that didn't even happen. It's like there's no point to even having Angelus around. It's definitely like a wild goose chase right now, and maybe I'm supposed to feel frustrated, or maybe they just don't know what they're doing. They want to bring him back before the show ends. I don't know.
I mean, either way, like, he is here right now. And I think that, you know, as always, he did a really good job portraying Angelus. I was a little frustrated because he is caged up. And while he's still very conniving and very charming in that very dark and twisted kind of way, it kind of sucks because, like, the best part of Angelus is, you know, him showing up where you don't expect him and him doing the things that he does. And, like, maybe that makes me kind of dark and twisted too. But, like, I was a little sad that he was locked up. But I will say that he's able to manipulate the whole group by still sitting in that cage. And that, to me, is the mark of a great villain. And I also want to give a shout out to Wes, who, yeah, exactly. I want to give a shout out to Wes, who I don't particularly love right now, but he's at least very aware of what they're dealing with. And I think for the first time in a long time, he kind of puts his pride to the side more so than not. And he tries very hard not to fall into the traps that Angelus sets, which unfortunately the others like Gunn and Fred kind of, they walk right into it.
I was disappointed in Fred for doing that. She hesitated, maybe like a deer in headlights kind of idea, like you're so scared you can't move. But it feels like she's been around enough to be out of that phase. Like they keep harking back to the idea that her and Gunn just killed someone, and to have the mindset to kill someone, you have to be a bit more on edge. That changes you, as Gunn often says. Whether or not she did it or not, I think she should be more alert and active and there for all of this, but she still acts like, it's almost like they're regressing her character too in a weird way with making her like so meek, when I don't think she is anymore. I think she changed per that episode.
I think you have to keep in mind, though, that this is Angelus. First of all, like Wes said, he's opportunistic. He's going to take any opening, no matter how small. But at the same time, they're staring into the eyes of one of their best friends, who also happens to be pure evil right now. And I really don't blame Fred for being scared, for not knowing what to do, for hesitating, for being confused. He's been built up so much that I think while she has reason to be that terrified, that's also kind of making everyone a little stupid too, because they're so afraid that they're not thinking clearly.
You know, something else I thought of is the fact that Angelus is such an old vampire, and Dracula was able to kind of convince Buffy to do whatever, like by looking into her eyes and hypnotizing her. So maybe he has some of those powers now that he's so old. I don't know if that's something you gain with age. It seems to be like the master's a lot of power.
I don't know if that's just age.
I think for Angel, like, he's just charismatic. He knows he can read people. And he's very manipulative. You don't have to have superpowers to be manipulative like that. So,
well, and I don't think Fred's never seen Angelus before. Mm-hmm. Like, so the seeing a person who you've come to trust, and like she's only known Angel. Like, remember, Angel was the one who jumped in and saved the day, and she very much hero worshipped him for a while. Like, to see him be this like purely evil being and seeing it in your friend's body, like, that has to be just like, I can't imagine what that would feel like to look in someone's eyes and have them not be the person you know. So like, that alone makes me understanding of anything that she might do that seems a little weird or out of character, just because this is like, oh, you know, a whole nother level, like, for her. She's never been around this. Like, Cordy and Wes have seen this before, and they're somewhat prepared for what's going to happen, but the others don't know what it's really like to see this. So it's, you know, it's a new way to see Angel and to understand exactly what demons he's fighting when he's Angel and is not Angelus. The other thing I wanted to say really quick is I love that they bring Angelus back, like they you know, turn Angel back into Angelus, whatever, and they think they can control him. Like, Cordy and everybody, they think they've got it. They've got him in a cage, he can't go anywhere, and then ta-da, his soul is stolen and they're stuck with him. He's not going to be able to stay caged. Like, I know Karen was like, you know, I wish he wasn't in a cage. Like, I really don't think that he's going to stay there. He's better than all of, like, Cordy kind of gave him a reason to just not try and get out of that cage. But now that he knows that's not going to happen, I don't see him staying there. Like, he's going to find his way out. He's too good. And so, like, I think this is another case of, like, them thinking that they have got everything under control and poof, it'll be, you know, completely out of control in a matter of seconds.
You know, it's weird, too, because I almost feel like, as much as I can critique the way that the show's writing it to be, yes, Cordy is a body more than a person, an object, it's almost like she uses that to her own advantage in a way that she knows she's not going to do. Because it maybe felt like she knew Angelus wasn't going to give them the final answer because he's not going to be that, I guess, good or positive in the world. So it's almost to me like she was playing him and she won over Angelus. So do we give her brownie points for that? Or am I going too far? And do you really think she was willing to literally sacrifice her body, her soul, whatever she needed to do for Angelus to save the world?
I think it's important to keep in mind that he did give them the answer. They were just too late.
Yeah. And I think she was very much willing to do whatever she needed to do, but I don't necessarily think she intended for it to have to go that way. Like, I think she knew what she was doing, willing to, you know, go worst case scenario. If what she promised had to happen, then I think Cordy would have gone through with it. But ultimately, I think she knew that she would find a way out of it and that she would outsmart him. Like, I think that is what she had planned the entire time.
Yeah, because she did outsmart Angelus in a form when he had the happy drugs and she was like, I've been delivering holy water. That was pretty cool. So I'm leaning more toward the fact that I think you're right, Kristen. She would have found a way to get out of this no matter what. Still doesn't really change the bad taste in my mouth of the story writing here, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We've all got our issues with that.
Speaking of bad taste in the mouth, is this a good segue? Wes kisses Fred, which really made me mad. Like,
he really kisses her, and she really kisses him too.
Wes, Gunn, and Fred, they can all leave. I just want them. I just want everyone off the show now. I'm just sick of everyone on this
Natalie.
Show.
Natalie!
What about Connor? Connor can go.
Connor can go. This is, and I just want Angel and Cordy to be in a happy bubble and the rest of them can all leave. They are all being gross and I just can't, I just hate it. It's Fred can take a hike. Gunn is being really, they're all, there's not a single one I can point a finger at as like, yeah, you're doing the right thing and are being screwed
right.
over. They're all being terrible and I just am sick of it.
I do agree with that because on the one hand, obviously it's easy to see what Wes is doing and how it's wrong because he really shouldn't have kissed Fred like that. At the same time, I was really mad at Fred for not telling Gunn what just happened and for, I mean, she kind of did kiss Wes back, she also took a step back and was like, wait a second, what just happened? Because, I mean, I can't really blame Fred for potentially looking at Wes and going, this is a guy that I do like. He's a friend. We have a lot of things in common. Should she have done that? Absolutely not. But it did take her by surprise. And I think she should have definitely pulled Gunn. But on top of that, Gunn, while I understand his anger at Wes, is being extremely possessive where Fred can, if she wanted to, you know, lay down the lines and be like, look, you shouldn't have done that. And I don't like you like that. I'm with Gunn. Like, they just all need to communicate better. So while I understand, Natalie, that you want everyone off the show, I'm really mad at Wes. And I just wish the other two would be a little bit better than they are right now.
Can I please just say how I'm so glad that they didn't have Gunn, like, walk in on this and believe her and walk away. Like, yeah. I'm glad that he called them out because at first I was a little nervous that he was going to, like, believe her and put it behind them and just walk out of that room. And I'm like, no, you know what just happened. Like, you know that nothing is not what happened here. Like, it just, I was really glad that he confronted them immediately and was like, tell me what just happened. And yeah, it's not my favorite thing, but it's also not my least favorite thing that's going on right now. So,
yeah. What I think we're seeing here, I think we're seeing the fall from Rome, the fall from the pancake kiss, because we had to get there because we were already calling them pancakes. And the show in the past was like, cool, people are going to call them pancakes. Awesome. We're going to write in a pancake kiss and make everything horrible. So that's what I'm seeing.
Oh, my God.
Because that was oddly specific. You guys have to admit.
It is unfortunate. We'll have to see how it plays out. Things are not great for them right now. But things are kind of worse in other areas because Angel's soul is gone. Which... really not good, friends. Really not good. Kristen has a good theory on who did it.
Yes, I do. Okay, so we have spent quite a bit of time this season with a character who has not been seen in about 2 episodes. And I really think that she is probably the one who snuck in and stole his soul while they were all being distracted by the Angelus of it all. And that person is Lila. And let's face it, West's has been very distracted these last couple of episodes and like broke her heart and all that jazz. So like it would make total sense for Lila to sneak in, steal the soul and leave, whether A, it could buy her some goodwill with whomever may still be alive in the Wolverman Heart world. I don't know. B, maybe she's going to use it as a bargaining chip for Wes. Or C, she's just Lila and loves chaos and is like, I'm going to take this and runs away. Like, there's a lot of things I think she could do with that power of having Angel's soul in her possession. And so I want it to be Lila. I want this whole her and Wesley thing not to just be a weird, creepy but somewhat healthy relationship that kind of went on. You know, like, they knew what was going on between them. And I want that to have meant more to this season than just that. And I think if she's the one who steals his soul, it makes her even more important to the story.
You know, because I'm Mitch, I can out crackpot your crackpot theory. And I'm going to go with Lindsay because we haven't seen him for a while and he probably hasn't been for that hand.
Oh boy.
Lindsay.
I forgot about him.
Did he get hit by Angel's car the last time? Or
he would definitely, things would definitely improve if we had Lindsay. Lindsay would love Angelus as he is.
Oh my God.
Happily ever after.
Yes, they would.
All right, so Lindsay and Lila are our guesses for who stole Angel's soul. So, and I know, Mitch, that you put in here, like, can't we just call Willow and have her pick up something from the magic shop and get him a new one? Let's just assume that it doesn't work that way. Don't think about it too much. It's fine.
So we're retconning the soul giving, retconning the cementing.
Well, not really, because if episodes, you think,
because I would not have survived. I would have exploded by now.
If you think about it, they have his soul. Like, his soul is there, whereas before, like, the soul went away because of what happened between him and Buffy. In this instance, they took it out and put it in something else. So they have his soul. They had just have to go find it. I don't think it's quite the same thing.
Well, I wonder then if when I'll avoid certain language here because I know Natalie knows it's not the orgasm. That's what she says. So when he's in his true moment of happiness with Buffy, okay? I'm assuming that the soul went into the ethos. And it's probably more dangerous because I assume anyone, given like Willow could have just called it out and brought it back and put it back or taken it away forever. I don't know. Whatever. Maybe no one knew that time. This time, now everyone's like all in on it. It's the whole thing. So they're like, I got to steal that jar and never let it get back in there. Because I assume if you break it, it'll go back into the ethos. Like, you have to keep it in the jar. It's kind of like a Davy Jones' heart thing for me. So let's see. Let's see who did it. I don't know what they're planning on doing, but they're not going to keep Angelus forever. Like, they can't. Because if they do, then, like, how can the show be called in Angel? It has to be without the U.S., I guess. That's how I'm seeing it.
We'll have to wait and see what happens, but I'm sure you guys will have plenty to say about it.
Well, because you would run out of, like, things for him to torture, I think. That's why they had to get rid of him eventually.
That's doubtful in my mind, but maybe. All right, let's jump into favorite scenes now. Mine is when literally everyone reminds Cordelia and Connor that they're basically mother and son, and, like, even Angelus says, like, there should be a play, and it's this whole thing. And I'm just glad that the characters see what we're seeing, and Fred is all like, that would be so weird. Oh, it actually, that happened. Okay, then. Still weird, though. And that was just great. I just love all of that. Kristen, what about you?
I loved when Cordy is standing in front of Angelus and, like, basically tells him, nope, sorry, buddy, not happening. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm smarter than you, wahaha. Because Cordy's awesome. And I was really hoping that she wouldn't have to go through with all of that. So I'm glad she found a loophole and got herself out of that situation.
And Natalie, what about you?
I have nothing. I hate this. I hate everyone.
You have nothing? Mm-mm. Not even Angelus?
Mm-mm. His laughing is great.
I don't love
great.
Angelus the way Brittany does. I like Angel and his cuteness. I am not into Angelus.
Okay, all right.
And
that's
I just found it all too disturbing. I had a few least favorite moments. One of my least favorite moments was when, you know, the toxic situation of Fred and Gunn and Wes got increased to the degree that Fred got hit in the face by one of them during the argument. So that was a low point. And then another low point was all of that, you know, talk about, you know, all of the stuff that Angelus would do to Cordelia's body. So that was another real low point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a good segue because Mitch's favorite scene is kind of along the same lines.
I'm with you, Natalie. My favorite scene was when this whole season was all just a dream and Cordy wasn't body snatched, and when Fred didn't cheat on her pancake, and when Wes wasn't such an angry puppy, and when Connor was still stuck in his hell dimension, but Angelus is still fine. He can stay.
yeah.
And Lauren. Lauren's pretty cool. He doesn't really do anything wrong. He's like the one pure character on the show left, really.
And he's the demon. Go figure.
Right?
Yeah.
This is a good segue, speaking of Angelus, into my favorite line, by the way, because this was such a simple, short line, but oh my God, one of my all-time favorites. It's when Cordelia is describing Angelus, and she goes, he lies with the truth, because is there anything more real than that? And really, those are the best kind of lies to have. And I mean, obviously, like, lying is bad, but if you're going to lie, like, lie with the truth, because it's so manipulative. And that's why Angelus is so good at hitting people against each other, because he uses the truth in order to manipulate them. And I just, ugh, I love that line.
It's a good one.
What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Kristen, your favorite line?
Again, mine's an exchange, because when it comes to the show, there's always like three people involved in my favorite lines. It's Wesley, Fred, and Lauren. And Wesley says, as long as we're very careful, before Angelus was ensouled, his viciousness was mythic. You all know his history. And Fred goes, killing, maiming, torture. And then Lauren chimes in, puppies nailed to walls. Thank you, Cordelia, for that lovely image. But I think that brings us up to speed.
Yeah.
It's Lauren injecting his little Lornism, but it's also like, how much more evil can you get nailing puppies to walls? Like, it's Angelus to a T. Like, it's pure evil. Pure evil.
Oh, my gosh. Natalie, do you have a favorite line?
No, but I guess I'll give a shout out to, and like, how much of a literary nerd that Angelus / Angel is. So, like, there's a lot of references in this episode of, like, you know, like things that, you know, like Shakespeare and poetry, mm-hmm. and stuff that Angel, and I guess Angelus as well in his spare time, is just such a literary referencer and such a reader of classics. And I enjoyed that. I always enjoyed that reminder of Angel's hobbies and interests.
And I love how he does it and people understand it too. That's the best part.
And Mitch, your favorite line is surprisingly from Connor.
Yes. I'm just going to let this one sit, Natalie, in particular. So you can chew on this if you need to. The truth is, Angel is just something that you're forced to wear. You're my real father.
Interesting.
It certainly fits with Connor's belief system.
Yeah.
He's probably thrilled that he gets to, like, take out all his angst on actual Angelus now. But
yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our discussion for these two episodes. Like I said before, if you'd like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find this post on hypable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We also love iTunes reviews. It helps other people find us. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I'm going to dress up as Evil Rat Amy next Halloween.
Oh, God.
It's going to happen.
I mean, Evil Willow this Halloween, right? Evil Rat Amy next Halloween.
That was my theme.
Yeah. Gender bent and jealous the Halloween after that. Ooh. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. All the evil, yes.
Yeah.
That's great.
I just need a black dress and a white crystal necklace, and I'm set. Evil Rat Amy will be even easier than Willow was.
If you carry around like a pet rat and then like a cheerleading trophy.
Oh my gosh. That would be fun.
People might get it.
Yeah, they might. All right, we do have some listener feedback. These are all from Twitter. And Mitch, will you read the first one?
Cassandra at Palliard writes, "No one should ever write, and it was all in a dream story. Lazy, cheap writing, so aggravating." That's like paraphrase from what I've said before. And it's funny that I would request for this whole season to be it's all a dream. But yeah, I get you. I get you, Cassandra.
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, will you read the next one?
Sure. The next one comes from Alejandra Claro at aclaro15, and she says, "Currently listening to Rewatchable episode 241 covering Angel episode 407, Apocalypse Now-ish. I've been waiting for this one since the dumpster love episode of Buffy, and I am not disappointed with the reactions. I'm trying to catch up to you guys, but it was so worth the wait. Hashtag sorry." Yeah, that remains one of our better episodes, I must say. It was a terrible episode to watch, but a really fun one to podcast about. So we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, definitely. And Natalie, will you read the next one?
Yeah. So this is about Dawn and potential. So Bailey Blake says, "If Dawn is made from Buffy and Buffy was already called as a Slayer and can't be called again, would it make sense to say that that's why Dawn couldn't be a potential? Dawn's line was already activated before she existed." Yep, it would make sense, but I think more the point of the potential episode is just that it wasn't her and how she handled that, you know, that discovery. The whys of why it would work or why it wouldn't work were not really a part of the plot, but yes, I do agree. Also, the fact that the first, you know, is apparently doing all of this stuff because, like, there's a disruption in the Slayer line. The Slayer line had been disrupted long ago. Like, the Slayer line hasn't been with Buffy since season one. Like, the Slayer line was passed from Buffy to Kendra, from Kendra to Faith. It's not, it's with Faith. So I don't know why they've shoehorned this in, but I guess that's the plot that we have.
Yeah. That's what I've said before, Natalie. I'm with you. But I think that they're going at their whole resurrection thing. It's fuzzy.
Yeah.
And our next tweet comes from Lucas Graydon, who says, "In 10 days, I watched 20 episodes of Angel and Buffy to catch up on 10 episodes of Rewatchable. And though I feel accomplished, I'm not enjoying the wait for new episodes." That is a lot of Buffy and Angel content to consume in just a little over a week. But man, good on you. Hope you're enjoying it. Here's a new episode for you. Hope you like it. And please continue to stick with us. We are still churning it out week to week, not too much longer now, which is actually a good segue into our last tweet from Farzan Garabat, who says, "I'm a little sad that the journey's coming to an end, but super excited at the same time for you guys to go through the final stretch of episodes of Buffy. They're really excellent in my opinion, and I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about them. I'm also really excited for the end of Buffy. There's just... we've been on this journey for so long, and this show, again, obviously so iconic and everything, that it's going to be interesting to see how everybody reacts to the end of it. And yeah, I'm super pumped, and I'm glad that everybody's been sticking with us." Speaking of which, we've got Mitch's musings and Kristen's contemplations up now. So next week, we will be discussing Buffy 714 First Date and Angel 412 Cavalry. So what are your guesses, newbies?
So we've already had Buffy 714, the Kennedy and Willow first date. Is this like Spike and Buffy's first date? It's like, oh, you're chipless. Let's go celebrate and let's be official.
See, for some reason, I have a feeling this is going to be like Willow and Kennedy go on an actual first date, since Kennedy kind of like manipulated Willow into going to have a drink. Like, I can see this being them going to a movie or whatever. I don't know. I would love it to be Buffy and Spike, like, going to dinner or going to play mini golf or something. Like, that would be the best. But I don't think we're going to be given that joy. So, I don't know. I'm going to say it's probably, like, Willow and Kennedy going on an actual first date. I'm sure there's some twisted, creepy thing involved in the... Maybe it's the first going on its first date. I don't know.
Oh, the word first is in there. Yeah. Like, it's the date the of the first doing something. Or this is a flashback episode, even better, of when the first was created. Like, we see, like, the Big Bang. I don't know. How far do you go back, the first?
There's a lot of creepy things that could be involved. So, yeah. Okay, and moving on. Angel 412 Cavalry.
So we're getting a lot of people to fight? To fight Angelus? To fight the Beast? Both?
I really, really, really want it to be, like, someone unexpected showing up to save the day. Because when the cavalry kind of, like, comes in and, like, when... in Lord of the Rings, when Gandalf shows up with Éomer and all the rest of Rohan and they charge down the hill to save Helm's Deep, like, that's like the cavalry appearing and saving the day. So I really want this to be like Faith arriving and like saving the day, like showing up to take down the Beast or something random like that. Like someone who we forgot about, who exists in the world and who will show up and help us would be really cool.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I keep saying Faith needs to come back in because you put her in jail, not kill her, so that you can bring her back. So it's only a matter of time until it's just like, help, you're the one that's, like, was she around? So Wesley wasn't around during Angelus. That means that Faith wasn't either. Am I right?
Faith has definitely met Angelus.
Yes.
And there was that whole thing where she, you know, tried to give him the moment of happiness and he pretended to be Angelus, you know?
Oh my God.
Like, that wow. She was going to remember.
Yeah, in the hotel.
She was going to, you know, the mayor was trying to get Faith on side with and Angelus on side with him. Yeah,
right. So probably Faith. I mean, who else can fight that we haven't seen in a while? Electro Girl. She's pretty cool. There was that girl.
We just
like,
saw her.
Yeah, but she can come back. I think she might just start to become like a reoccurring guest star. That'd be cool. And then maybe, wasn't there, like, a lady that Angel fell in love with that had, like, a special spine that tingled greatly when she was, like, feeling the warm fuzzies? Maybe she'll come back.
I don't know, but if Oz were to, like, come in with a bunch of werewolves and just, like, rah, that would be really cool.
Or is this the start where the crossover, is this where the crossover start? Because we're told to be very specific by superfans about which Buffy or Angel episode we watch, even within the same weeks. So we'll have to watch Buffy first and see if the first... somehow connects to the Beast, maybe. I don't know. And maybe some characters from Buffy will go over to the Angel to help fight the first / the Beast.
I don't know.
I'm waiting for the crossovers. God, I've been waiting too long. It's been since The Body, I think. Which, God, I don't want to think back to that.
So many thoughts.
Yeah, very good, as always. Some real theories, some crack theories in there, but I like them all the same. So thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. And until next week, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.